Good evening members, to this new meeting of the Loughborough Area Committee in the new municipal year. As it's the first meeting, we do not have a chairman as present, but before we start I need to read out the usual recording, so that I please note that this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, please be advised that under the Openness of Local Government Bodies Regulations 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. If you have any queries, please contact Democratic Services about this matter. Thank you. So the first item on the agenda this evening is the appointment of chairman. Do we have any nominations, please?
Can I nominate Councillor Colin Hamilton, please?
And is that seconded?
I'll second that.
Can I have a show of hands, please, to see how many people are in favour? So go around the room. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. That's unanimous. So, Councillor Hamilton, if you'd like to take the chair, please, thank you.
Thank you everyone for that endorsement, so good evening. Moving straight on to appointment of Vice Chair. Do I have any nominations for Vice Chair?
Can I nominate Councillor Jenny Tillotson, please?
Do I have a seconder? Councillor Bolton seconded. Any other nominations?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Campbell, please.
Do I have a seconder? Do I have a seconder?
I can second that.
So we're going to second that. So can we just move straight forward to a show of hands for show of hands for Councillor Tillotson? And can I have a show of hands for Councillor Council?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, 6.
So by that, I take it that Councillor Tillotson has been elected Vice Chair. Congratulations, Councillor Tillotson. Moving straight on to apologies. Do you have any apologies?
Yes, we've received two apologies, one from Councillor Mercer and the other from Councillor Draycott. I'm not aware of it. I think we've got a good full compliment here.
Yes, Chair, I've got to be about 7:15 for residence meeting.
Okay, noted. If there are no other apologies, can we move to the minutes of the previous meeting? And checking for accuracy, are there any comments on the minutes of the previous meeting?
Chair, might I say something? I've not been to this meeting for a year because I was the mayor, but I'm a little bit disturbed because this is in many ways a not political meeting, but we are sitting in political boundaries. In the past, I think, if my memory is, I might be very wrong because my memory has gone, but I think we used to sit down next to each other, and it was certainly not within political boundaries. And I see that Councillor Campbell agrees with me, so I would just point that out, please.
So if I can, Karen Widdowson for the recording, I can cut out the nameplates and mix them up in future if that's what you want me to do.
Oh, pick them up as you walk in.
I'll just mix you all up.
Thank you. Thanks for highlighting. highlight that point. I think that's quite an important point to say about this committee, is that it isn't a political body. This is all representatives of So can I, if there are any other, no other comments on the minutes, so can I, do you need to have to sign them off? So can I have approval from this committee that I can sign these minutes off?
Agreed.
Thank you for that. So moving very quickly on. Are there any, item five, are there any disclosures of pecuniary and personal interests? I'm seeing none. So we have the declaration, those who have pecuniary and personal interests. Item six, questions under committee procedure 12.8. I believe no questions were submitted. So moving rather swiftly on. Item seven, role and operation of the committee. So we have a report from the head of committee support and role. Can I invite the
chair? The purpose of this item is really just to refresh every member's mind, or those who are new, about what this committee is actually here for. It's quite important that we understand from the beginning what the remit of the group is. And so what's attached to the report is an extract of the terms of reference that were approved by council just over a year ago, I think. And it's simply to recognise that that is the remit, and we're being asked just to note that just for information, so that every member is aware of what should be happening in this particular forum.
Okay, so hopefully if there's an opportunity to actually read the text that is sent out on this. And I think that's an important point. I think one of the great challenges for this committee, I think, is the recording of the minutes, because this is it's a record of views, plural, of Loughborough councillors. So that it can be captured, collated, and then it becomes a resource that then is available to Cabinet or to any relevant committee who wants to give the views of Loughborough councillors on specific topics. And we're relevant. So I think that's an important point to keep in mind. No, we will not be taking votes, we'll be not making a decision as a group, it's about the views of upper councillors. Thanks for that.
I think, you know, I'm getting picky in my old age, it's got Loughborough Area Committee, 29th of June, I think it's the 19th, it just... For the record, is that right? Or have I got it wrong?
No,
it's not the 19th. I might have got it wrong.
Thank you for highlighting that. If there's nothing more to be said on item 7, can we move on to item 8, which is about control police detective order? And there you're looking for views from councillors on this topic. So I hand over to the member Gibson.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Nicola Gibson. I'm the Enviro Crime and Dog Control Manager, and I bring with me the report for the Head of Regulatory Services about dog control, public spaces protection orders. It's giving you an opportunity to have a look at the proposed public space protection order and comment on that. Just to give you a little bit of background about public space protection orders, and if I refer to them as PSPOs, it's just because it's a bit of a mouthful, so that's what I mean by public space protection orders. So they were introduced in 2014, and they're for antisocial behaviour. This particular one is just about dog control, but it can be about other antisocial behaviour as well. They cover the whole of the borough, or they can do, and it's to do with antisocial behaviour that's taking place. They impose conditions on people to set out restrictions so that people know what is acceptable within that area. And a breach of a PSPO is an offence which is punishable by a fixed penalty notice or prosecution in a magistrate's court. PSPOs cover locations, so we have public space protection orders and we also have community protection notices as well that deal with individuals. So we have a number of powers that we can use. One's based on the location, which is what I'm talking about tonight, and then the other option is on the individual, which is the community protection notice. So we use a balance of two of those. We do have a PSPO in place currently, and that was put in place in January 2017. They can last for up to 3 years, so we're getting near to the end of our 3 year term for the PSPO. We've had some really good results. It's people are aware of what the conditions are through publicity, through working with the parish and town councils and the ward councillors as well. So what we need to do is we need to decide whether we extend or vary the PSPO. So we started a consultation in March, at the start of March this year, to ask residents, organisations, various different parish and town councils and councillors about what they would like to see included within the public space protection order. And then what we did is we created a consultation paper and we got the responses back from that. The consultation was finished on May 24th and we had quite a really good response to that. So the next stage of the PSPO is to create a notice of intention. So the notice of intention does exactly that. It tells people exactly what we propose to put in the public space protection order. The notice of intention will go to Cabinet on the 4th of July, and then they will hopefully approve that notice of intention, and then we can publish that. We can publish it, we give the residents and other interested organisations 28 days to either object or to comment on the proposals in the notice of intention. After that time, then we can look at making and varying the order depending on the comments that we get. So we usually review that and then we'll have a look. If there's no major objections, then we'll make the order as per the notice of intention and the draft PSPO. So that's pretty much the process in a nutshell. It takes quite a long time because you've got to consult with the whole of the borough. People feel very strongly about dogs, as I'm sure you'll all know. So we have lots of comments, lots of feedback, and I would suggest that we probably have that again. So I've put some responses from the consultation. It's on page 11, so you can see those, and you can see what the general feeling about the proposals that we've put forward are there.
Are there any questions? Councillor Harrison.
You mentioned a major objection. What would constitute a major objection? Is it from a larger body, or is it a certain number of individuals here?
It can be some of the PSPOs, not in Charnwood but in other areas, have had major objections from organisations like the Kennel Club, like the RSPCA, even Liberty. So they're major objections, but it could be if we intend to add a location and say if 100 people said we don't want that, then we consider that a major objection.
Thank you. Councillor
Harrison. Yeah, thank you, Nicola, because I've had Nicola get down to my patch a couple of years ago, and you were talking about this, and this is so welcome, and hopefully it helps everybody. In my patch, we've only got very small areas of green, outside of, you know, the walking the dogs along the pavements, and we have a lot of problems with that. There is one thing, so the dog fouling, it's sort of the first on the list of things to do. dogs on leads, that is now being covered. This dogs on leads by direction, which is a little bit more difficult to understand. And of course we've got the dogs exclusion where children are playing, and I think that is going to really, really help in all of our patches, but because, as I say, we've only got very small areas for kids to be able to play. And I've been so disappointed where we have been given a small piece of land where the kids can play, and then we had a problem with a dog biting the secretary of the committee that was looking after it, and so all of that was, so this is very, very welcome. There are questions, but I think this is so much to look forward, and I think it's got to go to the cabinets, and we'll go through all of that consultation. And thank you very much indeed, Nicola. You've done a great job, and I want to say that.
It is important to note that it's only areas in the schedule at the back that are covered by those different conditions. So dog fouling is covered across the whole of the borough, any land that's open to the air where the public have access. But dogs on leads is only the areas within the schedule that's covered on that. Dogs on leads by direction is more to protect wildlife and other animals, so that's what's covered there, and it's then an offence to not put your dog on a lead if you're asked to do so by an authorised officer.
So that's, I think, what's the media.
Cheers, thank you. Looking at page 10 and item 10, because I had a resident or two residents over the election period actually contacted me by Facebook Messenger regarding Queen's Park. I think we had I know it's hard to believe, we had a dry spell a couple of days or so, and they were worried about the dogs that weren't on the lead in Queen's Park, and Queen's Park is quite big, but there's lots of young children around as well. So they were worried about that, so I just need to feedback back and say, have we thought about that? I know we have some play areas in Queen's Park, but a lot of children play outside those play areas, and if there's sometimes large dogs running around without leads, that could cause a problem and may cause a problem in the future.
There isn't a dogs on leads restriction on Queen's Park currently, and we don't have evidence to support that at the current time. What I would say as councillors, if you can help, is if you do have anyone that feeds back that there has been issues, that you ask them to report it, because as part of this process, this consultation process, I'll have a look at the evidence that we've got in history on any dog control cases. We haven't got anything for Queen's Park, so we couldn't justify putting a condition in place without having that evidence base. So if people do report it, then that can be something that we can look at in the future.
Okay, so what would be the best method for them to report it to the council?
They can do, there's a web form, so they can report it. If they just type in dogs, anything to do with reporting, anything to do with dogs is on there. Or they can email cleanergreener@charnwood.gov.uk, or they can call the contact centre as well. And then we'll take all the detail from them and then make an assessment after that, whether we just have it as a report or whether we can take any action.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Bradshaw speaking. A couple of things, please, Nicola. I noticed you got the question about limiting the amount of dogs on a lead. I wondered if at the moment you got an idea, because there's people like who have businesses. I totally agree that having loads of dogs, because I have two, and it's difficult for me to walk more than two, but it depends on the dog. I just wondered if you got, first of all, an idea of how many dogs you're intending to limit it to, if you were to do. And secondly, in terms of obviously limiting spaces and stuff for dogs, I agree with certain areas, and I just put it out to you that if we're going to limit loads and loads of different areas, where are they going to go? So perhaps it could be a possibility in the future to provide some spaces specifically for that, which would take away from the fact that not all residents like dogs, it can cause problems, but if there's provision for them, that may be another thought of the future.
I mean, with the proposal, we asked the question about if people think there should be a condition about numbers of dogs. As you can see, there wasn't an overwhelming support for that, so that's not something that we would consider at this time. But as I mentioned at the start, we do have powers for individual controls. So, for example, I've got two dog walking companies that I've received complaints about, so I've worked with them to say what they need to put in place to make sure that there isn't any issues and they can keep the dogs under control. So that's being done, you know, they're working with us at this moment in time. We're not having to take any enforcement action, which is, that's the way we want to do it really. But apart from that, there wasn't an overwhelming desire to limit the number of dogs. So at this point in time, it's not something that we need to pursue.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for that. Council?
You mentioned about wildlife areas. I just wondered, is there any dog control, as it were, so like the local nature reserves that we've got, and birds are nesting and dogs are sort of chasing the birds off the nests?
Yeah, so we're with local wildfowl, it's particularly at certain times when they've got when they've got young and when they're nesting. So dogs on leads by direction is, dogs on leads means that the dogs have got to be on a lead at all times. But dogs on lead by direction means that an authorised officer can instruct them to put the dog on a lead if it's causing issues, which seems to be the better approach. But that's why we do include it still within that, because we do want to protect the wildfire.
Right, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sam.
Thank you. Yeah, a couple of comments. I mean, my first one, I'll take them in order that they appear in the report. The first one is about the dogs on lead by direction. Somewhere where there are staff, like the pitch and put or the cemetery, I can see that being practical. But somewhere like Boothwood, where there is never anybody on duty, as it were, you know, if you did have a problem with somebody with a particular dog, then it's just not going to happen. You're not going to be able to have that dog on a lead, are you? Because there's going to be nobody there to actually
tell them. It's a good point. We can't be everywhere. I've been working with Cleansing and Open Spaces and the officers to talk about ranger support and people that do work in those locations to be able to feed into us any issues that they've got, so that we can either enforce it or so that they can speak to the people. So, yeah, we do have a limited resource, but you know, we feel it's important to protect the wildlife as well. So it's that balance.
I mean, I was thinking, agreed that the wildlife's an issue, but I was also thinking about someone's got a big dog that's off its lead and someone else has got a little dog and, you know, they pick it up and they're likely to get hurt themselves. And I know that has happened, not necessarily in Loughborough, but it has happened around the country.
We do really encourage people to tell us about any incidents. Even if they don't know who it is, if they tell us some details about the description of the owner, the description of the dog, where it happened, sort of the time, the location, the date, that kind of thing, then we can get that intelligence. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we'll be able to trace somebody, but sometimes you can see patterns, and sometimes we might know those individuals. They can tell us the vehicle registration details of the car so that we can see if we can trace them. Or we can go and do a patrol, because often dog walkers are habitual, so they'll go at the same time to the same location. So it is, we're not going to catch everybody and we're not going to be able to deal with everything, but we've had a significant increase in the amount of reports that we're getting. So people are telling us about incidents.
I pick up Councillor Mears' point about Queen's Park, and I think on a busy sunny weekend, a lot of people, I think the worst thing in the world would be somebody's dog running around the place, and so I think perhaps, you know, some control there wouldn't be unreasonable. And my final comment was about, on top of page 12, number of dogs, and I was thinking it's interesting how the Bradshaw picked it up as well. You couldn't have a, because you could walk half a dozen Pomeranian or, you know, Dachshunds or something like that, whereas three Rottweilers might be an issue. So I think we possibly could say something to the effect of the person walking more than one dog must be able to control the number of dogs they're walking. Because you could,
I totally agree. I mean, there's not a specific type that's more aggressive than another one. It depends how they how they've been treated. It depends on the background, a whole number of things. But no, we would expect anyone with even one dog to be in full control of that dog. So the same applies to whether they've got one, two or three. But we are working, like I said, with the dog walking companies. More so because they often walk a lot of dogs, but it's not they're not their dogs. They're walking them for other people. So often they don't know the dogs as well as an owner might know their dog and might know sort of signs of aggression, signs of when it might attack, that kind of thing. So it's about working with those groups as well and trying to make them understand that, you know, the public want to be able to be out in Queen's Park and places like that without being worried about their safety.
Thank you.
Councillor Christine Harris.
Yes, thank you. There are a number of...
It's all right, carry on, Christine.
Doesn't matter. I think what we're talking about is more responsible dog ownership overall. I've been on the Outwards Committee and I've been a councillor for a long time, and I'm just looking at the quick list that I've just made. So in the Outwards, people take their dogs for a walk. And very often they don't have the lead. They also take their dog, other people's dogs, as a business. And I'm wondering if the leader is listening to this, because I just wonder if there are different categories. You know, if you've got 10 dogs on leads, as I've seen in the Outwards sometimes as well. That, in my opinion, is a business, and that is using a public place, wrongly. We also then have to look simply at companion animals. We love dogs, you know. I'd have a dog, but he won't let me, so that's it. I had 6 cats, and that was another issue, and that was another problem. But nonetheless, you know, you've got to be responsible. And they're brilliant. And I love dogs. There's no problem. So it's not about the dogs. It's about how you handle them. And of course, I see in my patch, and I'm sure other people see them, we have people with disabilities, people that have got maybe... dementia or other illnesses, where they have the support agencies give them a dog to support them. So that is another, these are all different categories. And so dogs, that they are not the problem, it's how people handle them. And I just wonder if this can be broken down a little bit more, Nicola. You've done an amazing job, and maybe this could be taken through council, that could be passed through other MAPS, open spaces, and one of the others that where you take dogs out in the town. But you have them for a very good reason. And I'm trying to say, you know, maybe we need to look at, dissect and look at this and look at it a little bit more carefully. Is that including, you know, things where people maybe have to have badges for particular uses and all of that?
The assistance dogs are exempted, so there are exemptions for assistance dogs and therapy dogs. So the assistance dogs and the therapy dogs are usually dogs that are trained by those organisations, so they're usually under good control, and then they just get registered, and they have, it's like a licence in effect, so they have a registration form, and they would show us those if we ever wanted to see them. So there is an ever increasing number of those, but that's controlled by the scheme, by the licence scheme.
Just a couple of things with the dog walking, Nicola. I must admit, Alan and I have discussed this, but I do wonder that certainly on the larger dogs, whether it couldn't be in order to put a halter on, the dog muzzles, if they've got big dogs, and make that an order. Mm. Add that to a requirement, if you like, particularly for the big ones, though I accept little ones can be just as vicious.
We wouldn't have that as a location-based thing that everybody's got to do it, because then you're saying every dog's aggressive. Mm. So, but we do deal with, there's lots of, through the community protection notices, we require people to put a muzzle on their dogs, right. And we've had a lot of success with that. So you can't just say a particular breed is going to bite. It goes across the range. So
I just
say we'll deal with the individual.
Big dogs, when they're up there, are a large number. Having had a daughter with an Alsatian bite at the traffic lights in Loughborough, and I think we did have one go to court recently, didn't we, for 6 months?
Yeah, so we deal, the council deals with dog on animal attacks, and the police deal with dog on human attacks, so they can put those restrictions in place as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Yes, thank you. It's an excellent report. Thank you very much. I go on record as saying I dislike dogs intensely. When you've been bitten 3 times in 5 years, it tends to put you off. I prefer cats. And twice, two of the dogs that bit me were nasty, yapping little Yorkshire terriers.
They're the worst.
They are the worst, yes. So anyway, moving on. Page 13, I'm just intrigued by the last paragraph. It's really about outer Loughborough, if you like, but once the PSPO is in place, it will be enforced by, and then D, suitably trained and qualified enforcement officers. Trained by whom and qualified how, please?
Yeah, so the groundsman and enforcement officer at Bursley Parish Council, that was a really good opportunity. They needed a new groundsman, so they said it'd be great to have an enforcement officer at that stage. So I worked with Bristol right from the start, from creating a job description and person specification, to doing the shortlisting and the interviewing for the correct candidate. And then he's been trained by my enforcement officers, and he's also been on a Keep Britain Tidy course as well. So, and he's refreshed. And then we also do training about spotting signs of dangerous dogs, how to deal with dangerous dogs on an annual basis. So there's a lot of training. We do have other parish councils at the moment who would like some enforcement powers, but you have to make sure that you are choosing the right person, and because they're representing the Charmelborough Council.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Yes, it's very slightly peripheral to the conversation, but you referenced the two dog walking companies. I was minded of some work I've just done with Bristol City Council, who identified 7 or 8 businesses operating fully from their parks with quite substantive turnovers. The dog walking was easy to spot because the van turned up and six dogs got out. But they had Nordic walkers running 2 classes a day with 15 to 20 people turning up. Do we have much awareness of that going on in our parks?
We haven't, not so much the exercise side of it. We do have a few dog walking companies, but we're working with them, and they they're being responsible now, so we're not having to take any. charging them, no.
Bristol started charging because they were using it as a business facility, and they were using it solely. It's the sole business facility for business. And so they had between £500,000 and £1 million worth of business going on in their parks. And I agree their parks are substantive, but it's worth thinking about because it's technically a business operating on our land. So it is worth thinking about. It's surprising, someone running two classes a day, 3 days a week, charging £10-15, 20 people turning up. It's a couple of £1,000 a week, and that's all on our land. If it, you know, it was all on Bristol's parks, solely running their parklands, so they felt that constituted a business operating.
Yeah, I'll do some research.
Thank you, that's a good point. Thank you.
Councillor? It's Councillor Brennan. I'd just like to say a word in favour of dog walking businesses. As Councillor Harris rightly said, dogs are really important companion animals, and a lot of lone working people and working families couldn't in fact own a dog if they weren't able to pay someone to come in and walk it during the day. Added to that, I appreciate that there are some big businesses with quite high turnover, but a lot of dog walking companies are small companies, they're self-employed people, they're often run by mums and dads during school hours who may struggle to find employment that didn't fit with school hours, so it's really benefiting everybody. And I think it's important that particularly those small businesses are supported to do their job in a way that doesn't cause a nuisance. And I just wanted to ask, you said that you've been supporting some dog walking businesses to make sure that they're operating safely and responsibly. Is there training that you can refer them on to?
There is training that we can refer them to, but we find that with the advice and support that we give to them, and it's often just quite sensible measures, if they've got eight dogs, maybe do two at a time and swap them over, but bearing in mind that you don't want lots of dogs in the back of a hot van. So you've got to factor all of that in, but just about making sure that they're aware of signs of aggression, that they know, you know, sort of various signs what the dogs might have if they're distressed, if they need any sort of welfare issues. So yeah, it's about supporting them. We don't want to come down on them and enforce, and that's why a location-based condition is more restrictive, rather than working with them in the first instance, because we want to encourage businesses, we want to encourage people to be able to have dogs, but we just want to reduce the amount of issues.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. Is there any further comments?
Yeah, a good example of the PSPO in practice is actually in the town centre, and this was actually a dog on dog attack, so it wasn't a dog on human, and it was actually a vulnerable user. It was a blind person's guide dog was attacked. He came and approached me, and I think he was extremely helpful, and I think it's fair to say that you went above the call of duty to help the person whose dog attacked the guide dog was one of Nicola's well-known beggars, and so you went above the call of duty to ensure that an adequate notice was served. I then took two photographs of this dog without the muzzle in a period of 2 days, and fed that back to you, and then you had to reapproach them with a differently worded PSPO. And since then, there hasn't been an issue.
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of, anyway, and certainly this blind person hasn't contacted me.
No. Yeah.
Okay, thanks for highlighting that. If there are no further comments from any councillor. Okay, thanks very much. That was a very useful, interesting report. Hopefully, you got some good feedback. Moving on to our substantial issue, the Loughborough annual update report. So there's a number of parts to this. So, okay, beginning with the executive council.
Hello everyone, I'm Leslie Tansey, Head of Finance and Property Services. I'd like to present the outturn report, which is on page 16. The special expenses outturn produced a favourable variance of £1,000 against the budget of £1,351,000. The major overspends and underspends are detailed on items 2 and 3 of page 16, and the variances are detailed in pages 29 to 33. If you've got any questions in an operational way, our heads of service are able to help as well as myself.
Is there any questions from that? Councillor, yeah.
Cheers, thank you. good report, nice to see it early, which is really good. I just want to make 2 points, is that even though we're £1,000 out on a budget of £1.3 million, there are some in there that are wildly up and wildly down. But there's a couple that I wanted to draw up on and pick your brains as to why that happened. The parks in Loughborough and the cemetery. So the cemetery one I can understand. Is it because we were having the consultation and the reconsultation of whether to have the cemetery extension, and is that why the heads of services recharges in the Loughborough special rate? And if that's so, is that balanced? You know, that was a piece of work that we did for the borough as a whole. You know, we need a cemetery provision. Is it that we should put it in there? And then my second question is, and I'll give them both, so it's there, is to just praise the town centre for the markets, because it looks excellent that we've got so many traders on. We've extended with pedestrianisation the floor space available for the market, and it looks like we're taking advantage of that. But what does happen is that now cattle market isn't as much used. It is in the springtime when the flower comes, but the market seems to be migrating towards the rushes. The master plan is in there. What's the plan to redevelop that area, and is that being costed? Thank you.
I think in terms of the cemetery, is that one for Matt?
It's Matt Bradford, Head of Cleansing and Open Spaces. I guess the main difference between the parks, Loughborough and the cemetery are how myself and officers working on different projects have allocated their time throughout the year. So we allocate our time according to what we spend our time on, and that's caused the variance in this. Obviously, in the past year, we have spent a significant amount of time on cemetery work, and I think that's reflected in the higher charges for the cemetery and the lower charges for parks of Loughborough, because we obviously looked at the parks less and the cemetery more in the year that's just gone by. It's just a way that's been done. I think there was a second point to the question about should that be charged to special expenses. It is a cemetery for Loughborough, and some of our parishes will have their own cemetery provisions, and they'll be being funded through parish precepts and things like that. And we do recognise in our fees and charges that there's a lower rate for Loughborough residents than borough-wide residents, and for residents outside the borough. So there's a three-tier charging system in place to really reflect the fact that Loughborough residents are supporting the cemetery financially, and other people that wish to have their loved ones buried there will have to make an extra contribution in order to recognise that.
Okay, thank you for that. And then my second part of the question was the town centre and the markets.
So I can answer around the markets, but not on the master plan, but the area that you actually referred to obviously is part of the master plan, and we would be engaged in discussing that and the development of. The area around the cattle market and Dunge Square, there's basically there are quite a few seasonal traders there, so you're quite right. In summer, it's very active. We've got lots of plants, people, and there's lots of activity there. In the winter months, there's not as much. It is something that we're looking as an opportunity to address. But most of the new traders are wanting to come onto the market
around the Essex or Market Street as such, and we're looking to consolidate that before we actually then tackle the area that you've spoken about.
Okay. I think there's an opportunity there.
Yes.
Just to, you know, maybe introduce some traders in there or different types of trades in there with the space that's available.
Well, we are looking at opportunities, different types of initiatives like students occupying part of the market on Market Street on an evening market.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things in the pipeline, and also maybe introducing the craft market, but that was all part of our original plan.
Thank you.
I was just going to make a comment about Loughborough Cemetery. It was interesting the other night to pick up on the local webpage. It's called Remember Loughborough. And there's a comment about the cemetery, and somebody actually saying, what a fantastic job the groundsmen have done. I'm having done some research with one of the ex-mayors on some of the history of our ex-mayors down there. The years I sort of got to know some of the areas and some of the men, and I believe there are only two that actually do the major work. So I came back and said it's nice to read the comment, because I believe there are only two officers that are doing all the work, and they were obviously read the comment as well and came back, and but it was nice to know that comment had been made, because it probably wouldn't have ever reached the council in a normal letter of thanks. So I took note of that, and this morning in Derby, waiting for my car to be serviced, I sat next to a lady who happened to say she comes to Loughborough, and I said, what do you come to Loughborough for? She said, well, I catch the bus for an hour and a quarter from Derby to come to your market, which I think is fabulous. And I said, which stalls? And she proceeded to tell me. And this is every Thursday she comes, rain or shine. So we must be doing something right.
Yes, that's excellent. Councillor Morrison?
Yeah, it was really just to pick up on the, obviously, really interesting to see the breakdown of where we are, and to be within £1,000 on a sort of 1.3 or more million-pound budget is extraordinarily good. In particular, I was just going to highlight the lights. I mean, I think probably everyone around this table has already, when we saw the presentations originally, I can remember Sylvia's magnificently pitch black presentation where we had to crowd around your computer screen.
We did, yes.
I have to say, having finally seen them come on, they were brilliant. And we had 23,000 people turn up. To my great satisfaction, I Googled how many the city had for their switch on, and it was 21,000, so we did much, much better than the city. But actually, I think residents and visitors got a good show, because they look fantastic. I appreciate we had some teething problems with the weather, and hopefully come next year, the weak links and the, you know, whatever was causing some of the lights to go out, hopefully will be sorted. But that type of piece of work, I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing some of the additional work on the market, because I know how much work goes into the preparations to getting it right. The lights, I think, were a great example of where it was right. And I know how much work is going into the consultation with the market traders and also some of the other businesses in town to make sure that when some of those changes are made, everyone's on board and everyone sees the benefits straight away. So I think there's some really interesting work going on in Loughborough. To see the breakdown of the budget, showing where that money is being spent, I think is really good. It's very, very clear. Likewise, I think the cemetery work, it's worthwhile putting in the work this year, because that's our cemetery for the town now for the next 150 years. And I think it's money well spent, or more. But I think it's money well spent on the basis that, again, we've now got the right decision. I think everyone in town appreciates that decision. And we've now got space for the town. We don't have to go back out in 30 or 40 years from now to start the process all over again. So it's great to see that level of detail and to see where the money's gone. Thank you.
Just another point to note is that we've managed to keep the rate the same for the next financial year. So 19-20, we've got the same rate. Budget slightly increased with the council tax space,
yep.
But we've got another 17,000 added to the budget next year to maintain that same service.
Two points. One is just to reiterate something Jonathan just said. I'm absolutely delighted to see a budget come in on £1,000. I wish all the other budgets came in as close when we see and work on the outturns in the next few weeks. A small point, and it's just a point I've made a number of times on this committee, just to sense off something not quite feeling right, that when we are approached as Loughborough councillors with regard to anything we want to add to the Loughborough special expenses, we're invariably approached about sums that we might have available for the year of 20,000, 30,000 in total on a £1.3 million budget. But once it's in the budget, we see variations of 30 and 40,000 that are moved within budget once they're done. It doesn't quite feel right for the democratic deficit between what we're able to decide on that budget and what we're not. It doesn't quite feel good.
I thought the variations in...
I'm not to you at all. I'm not aiming that at you in any way. In any way. It's a general observation of long term on this committee in terms of big episodes. So not at you in any way, shape or form.
Thanks for that point, Councillor Harris.
Councillor Keith Harris. I was speaking with Councillor Boker last winter, and she mentioned something that... we talked about before, about having more musicians and artists and performers to try to increase footfall. And Councillor Boker said that it's understandable, nothing was happening at that time because it was winter and dark and whatever, but she said it would be happening with the university particularly, inviting university artists down to try and create an atmosphere where people want to come into the town, but I haven't seen anything of it yet since and it's now midway through the year. Is there any, there's no mention of it here, there's a mention about student market stalls, but nothing about performance. So is that going to happen?
There is continuous dialogue, sorry, Sylvie Wright, Head of Leisure and Culture. There's been continuous dialogue with the university encouraging different students and initiatives down, and there has been some students that have been performing, and but what we look at is, as well as an event programme, which has been very, very busy in June particularly, because sometimes we have two things programmed on a Saturday or Sunday. Most recent examples, we've had 20,000 people attend the bike show, 22,000 attend the recent vintage car show, which was coincided with Father's Day. So a lot of work has been done on quite a lot of the big events, and we're continuing to work with the university and other partners in kind of helping them to pitch up at the market, and they tend to like to come on market days when it's busy. I think when we actually secure an entertainment space that we can publish, that will generate more interest. But please be assured that work is going on and continuing to encourage people to come along. The advantage of having a positive approach to buskers and performers is that we don't actually then need to pay a performance rights licence, because if it is arranged and organised by ourselves, there is, that licence is based on how many people attending. So we do want a mixture of planned events and encouraging people to come and use the space and perform. But we'll continue to develop that, and maybe we can report back on it at a later meeting.
Yes, thank you, because I go to various towns and cities throughout the rest of Europe, and there are wonderful classical folk and other forms of music going on of extremely high quality, just music students and performing all over the place. And it really does create a nice atmosphere, and it does encourage people, I'm sure, and
Well, we have got some excellent events coming up. And we did have performers at the ceramics market, and that's only we've just had performers that should have been on Picnic in the Park come into the town. So there has been quite a few events and activities.
Thank you.
Thanks for that.
Prince, yeah. Sorry, this report is quite large and it covers quite a lot of things because it's an update report. So I had other comments on other aspects of the report, if that's okay. So another one's back to the cemetery. And I know we're going to go to...
We'll have the opportunity to cover these.
Okay.
Shall we just maybe move on to this topic?
I've got one more then on the finances.
Okay.
Then. Okay, and it's to do with the town hall. So we've got a breakdown of the town hall, and it says that we've exceeded income by £285,000 last year. If that's correct, that's a fantastic amount. So I just wanted to ask the head of finance while she's sitting there, is the town hall actually costing us any money now, or is it paying for itself?
Head of pleasure. Yes, we're extremely pleased with the income that additional income that's generated. But what is important is the level of profit at the end of the day. So it's what level of profit we make from that income. Because in order to generate that income, we did have additional expenditure. But the profit has continued to go up. With our income lines, not just in our shows and concerts, but also on the bar and also on our room lettings. So we did very well on all of those elements. So we came under budget. The town hall still has a subsidy attached to it from the council, and will continue to do so, but the aim is to continually look to reducing that subsidy,
right, okay.
and the team are working very hard to do that. Some of the replacement of the seating was, and some of the improvements that we did spend on the hall are continuing to bear fruit, and the fact that people are responding really well to that investment. And so not only have we got more income in, but we had additional 28,000 people through the door. So we are on the right track, but it is a journey.
Okay, thank you. Probably subsidy later at another bit. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Can I just clarify to Jeff Parker, Chief Executive, the town hall operates outside the special rate.
Yeah.
It's actually in the general fund. If anyone's just looking for it,
yes,
in the papers. As long as the town hall there, because it's not funded.
Yeah.
Through the special rate. So the special rate collection contributes nothing at all towards the cost of the town hall. It's only items that are in this report.
Yeah.
Just so everybody's clear. Appreciate a lot of members are new, and this will be take a bit of time to get used to. So just make that clear for you.
So thank you for that clarification. Is that all the finance specific questions?
Thank you.
Right, okay. Thank you very much. And would it now be Sylvia Wright?
Yes.
Who I think has probably already done most of her bit anyway. but you may take centre stage now to fill in any of the gaps that have already been addressed.
Thank you. Sylvia Wright. My report starts on page 17. Just a little bit of an update on the market's improvements. The scheme is actually in its final stages, and the improvements to date have mainly been to the infrastructure. And so far that has had a really positive effect on the market, resulting in our corporate plan targets being met. So the number of market units that we actually let last year was 16,601 against our target of 16,000, which is still a very challenging target. And the number of traders that we have currently stands at 100 against our target of 92. And the type and variation of trade and goods has also increased because we're looking to, obviously, we talked about street food, so that's one of the things that's been increased. We have got some street food traders on a waiting list, and as we get the market electrics completed, that means we can bring some new traders in there. The scheme itself covered marketing, the layout,